Welcome to this installment of That's History. I'm Chris Satullo of WHYY, and I'm joined, as always, by Jonathan Zimmerman of New York University, where he's a history professor. And what we do on That's History is look at current events and find parallels, echoes, and resonance from the past. Welcome, Jonathan.
Good to be here, as always.
So our topic for today is the death penalty and its long and troubled history. But the latest installment occurred fairly recently in Arizona.
Yes, it involved a man named Joseph Wood, who was a convicted double murderer, and he received the death penalty and was administered lethal injection. But the reason it made headlines is that it took nearly 2 hours, and according to witnesses, he gasped about 600 times before he finally died. Also, midway, there was an appeal to a Supreme Court justice to suspend the proceeding, which, by the way, was denied.
So this comes on the heel of a similar incident in Oklahoma earlier this year where there were also problems with the process of lethal injection. So although it's impossible completely to put aside the moral considerations of whether you believe in capital punishment or not, there's a particular problem with the notion of how, when the state chooses to end a life as a matter of justice or retribution, how it is ended. Now, this goes back as a problem to the beginnings of American history.
It really does. And I think the recurring historical pattern actually is the search for what you might call a kinder, gentler way of putting human beings to death. So hanging was the first way that we did it.
Hanging was an improvement then.
Well, actually, yes. I mean, hanging came really to England from, we think, German tribes in the 5th century. And it was part of, well, a whole series of ways to put people to death, which included boiling and disemboweling and burning alive and burying alive and on and on. And hanging actually was considered more humane than those other methods because allegedly it was quicker. You would create something called the hangman's fracture, which to you and me means breaking somebody's neck. But it turns out that actually it's quite difficult to affect the hangman's fracture, and the vast majority of people who were hung died by asphyxiation, that is, by strangulation. It often took a very long time. And there were many efforts made to improve, if you will, the process and make it more efficient. So in the 1840s, in the United States, as there was more and more news about these very long and drawn-out hangings, what you have is the creation of the so-called long drop. That is, we'll make a really, really high gallows, and hopefully that the person will die quickly. Or there were these intricate pulley systems that were called jerkers that were created, where you actually tried by attaching a pulley and a weight to a guy's head to jerk his head upwards. So you weren't simply relying on gravity. You would actually break his neck by pulling it upwards. But these didn't work very well either.
So this is good old-fashioned American values. Apply technical ingenuity to a problem and you'll have a solution. So then what follows hanging is the next mode of more humane forms of execution.
What follows is the electric chair, and this is what I find so fascinating historically. Some Americans might associate the electric chair with barbarism and pain today, but it's important to understand that in the 1880s, when it was introduced, it was actually a humanitarian innovation. The governor of New York, who convened a commission on this subject, actually said, we will use science to replace the barbarous method of hanging.
Into this particular quest stride two pretty big names in the history of American invention and business.
Indeed. Thomas Edison, really the father of modern electricity, and George Westinghouse. And what's fascinating and very troubling about the history of the electric chair is it gets tied up in a competition between Edison and Westinghouse. Edison had developed something called direct current. His competitor, Westinghouse, created alternate current and actually eventually won the patent to alternating current. So each of them are trying to promote a system. Although it's difficult to get our hands around now, what happened was Edison actually testified in favor of an alternating current electric chair. He
right.
wanted his opponent's system used in the electric
because he
chair.
Was no big fan of the death penalty, so he wanted sort of guilt by association for Westinghouse.
Exactly. He one of the things he was trying to persuade consumers was that the other guy's system was very dangerous, indeed potentially lethal. So what better way of doing that than having the electric chair use the other guy's system? Meanwhile, Westinghouse secretly paid the lawyers of the defense of the first guy who was eventually put to death under this. That guy, his name was William Kemmler. He was a Philadelphian, one of 11 children, born in 1860 here. Secretly, George Westinghouse helped pay the defense team for William Kemmler that was trying to show that this new system of execution was, well, cruel and unusual.
My goodness, it takes a while to, like, even contemplate that somehow the death penalty became tied up in a marketing battle between two industrial giants.
It absolutely did.
All right, so we have the electric chair. What follows the electric chair?
Well, that would be, of course, the gas chamber. The electric chair generated all sorts of, well, ugly headlines. Despite what its advocates said, people in electric chair did not go easily into the good night, jerking and convulsing and retching. So Nevada in 1921 became the first state to create a gas chamber, and the idea again was it would be, quote, more humane than the electric chair. Indeed, initially in Nevada, the idea was put the guy in a room and just let him go to sleep and don't even tell him that this is his last night. So he'll just, again, go gently into that good night. Yeah. Of course, nobody knew how to do it. The first question was, where do you get the gas? Well, Nevada's answer in 1921 is, let's get this thing called HCN. That was the acronym that was used at the time to fumigate citrus plants. But it was only made in Los Angeles, and no railroad was willing to transport this material because it was so lethal. So a warden in Nevada sends his aide and the aide's wife in a truck to L.A., to get this stuff, to get this HCN, which they then administer a few days later. And lo and behold, it takes many minutes. The first prisoner didn't go gently into the night. He gasped and retched and convulsed and all of that. And after that, they experimented with cyanide, other kinds of poisons. But as listeners might guess, in the wake of the Second World War and the revelations about Nazi gas chambers, that method becomes entirely discredited. It becomes associated with the Holocaust, and then we seek something else.
And that something else would be lethal injection.
It would be lethal injection. Interestingly, back in the 1880s when the electric chair was being developed, some people were already suggesting lethal injection, but the American Medical Association and other doctors' groups said that this would violate the Hippocratic Oath, said we don't really know how to do this well, which of course is still an objection that you hear.
If you look back across this history, it seems to be a pattern repeated throughout history. Something comes in, advertised, marketed as the more humane way. Things do not go as planned. There are a sequence of horror stories, and over time you sort of feel building force to say, no, this isn't humane either. And of course, gets all this is the backdrop of the Constitution and the Supreme Court's interpretation of the Constitution and, you know, the phrase about cruel and unusual punishment. Does it feel right now that we're coming to sort of the end time or beginning the end time for lethal injection?
I think it very much does. You know, Austin Surratt just wrote a terrific book on the history of botched executions, and he shows actually that there have been more botched executions under the lethal injection system than the other ones that we had. One of the other points that emerges from Surratt is that we actually don't know what we're doing. Just like Nevada in 1921 didn't really know what this HCN gas was going to do to this prisoner, there's a huge amount of ambiguity and, frankly, ignorance about how to put people to death. The drugs that we use were not developed to put people to death. They were developed for other purposes. So there really isn't a science to it, nor are scientists or physicians involved in the activity.
The other thing going on right now is sort of the judgment of other societies, particularly in the Western world, where in Europe the death penalty is frowned on, and the manufacturers of some of the substances used in this lethal cocktail that's used for death by injection are refusing to sell it.
That's right. And that was a subtext in the Wood case as well, the Joseph Wood case, because that three-drug cocktail that you're alluding to, thanks to the objections of these European manufacturers, has become unavailable. So they were experimenting with a sedative and an opiate, and they really were experimenting. They had no idea what they were doing. We don't have professional executioners in America. Interestingly, in England, they did. There were these people called hangmen. And what we did was we imported hanging without the hangman. We delegated this task to sheriffs and other local officials, and that's still what we do.
Right.
And they don't know how to do it.
Despite the technological overlays, it's still sort of the situation.
It is an amateur enterprise. Mm-hmm. We don't have professional killers in the United States. We put people to death, but we don't do it in a professional or a scientific way.
That would seem to be a pretty good place to stop. We've been talking to Jonathan Zimmerman, professor of history at New York University, and this is That's History. Thank you as always, Jonathan.
Thanks. It was good to talk.